Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast. The RTC features only the best OTR on our live stream, where we also invite you to tune in and enjoy the Radio Book Channel and the RTC Music Channel, all found at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the weekly download. We're back with some mysterious stuff going on, some adventure stuff going on. I think you're going to like it if you like the more scary side of OTR. We'll start off with an episode of The Clock from 1947, and this is The Man Who Lived Once Before, John Shipley.
Sunrise and sunset. Promise and fulfillment, birth and death. The whole drama of life is written in the sands of time.
We present a new series of radio programs, The Clock.
Felis domestica, better known as the common house cat, is rumored to have nine lives, while man is presumed to have but one. Such is the common conception. But there are some who believe otherwise. There are some who say that the present life they live is merely one of a number, and that if you could go back in time, you would find yourself again in another age, perhaps in another form. Well, I don't intend to take sides in the matter, but I was wondering if I could offer anything by way of evidence. A story, perhaps. The tale of one John Shepley, a man whose clock turned backward in a most unconventional way. A man who returned to a life he had lived once before.
Sit down, my dear. Relax.
I suppose I'm behaving like a child, Dr. Brewster, but I'm frightened. You don't know what I've been through in these last few weeks.
Well, suppose you'd tell me about it, Jean.
You know, of course, that John and I are soon to be married.
I was hoping for the pleasure of attending your wedding.
Wedding? I don't know anymore if there'll be a wedding.
Why? What happened?
John's ill, Dr. Brewster.
Ill?
Oh, not physically, but there's something wrong with his mind, I think. It started with a dream.
A dream?
Yes, he's had that dream every night for the last 3 weeks. He won't tell me what it is exactly, but I can see what it's doing to him. It's changing his personality. It's making him behave like someone else.
Oh, I see.
I love him very much, Dr. Brewster. Up to now, I was sure he loved me.
And now?
I don't know. I came to you as a last resort.
But, I'm not a psychiatrist, Jean. I can't interpret these dreams for him.
You're his friend, Dr. Brewster. Perhaps the only one he can talk to. And you may be the only one who can save him.
Save him? You sound as if his life's in danger.
It is, Dr. Brewster. It is.
John, what is this thing that Jean fears so much? What's happened between you?
Dr. Brewster, I'm going to ask you a very odd question.
Oh, I'm used to odd questions.
Do you believe in reincarnation?
Reincarnation?
Do you believe man can live more than once? That you and I and Jean once existed before in a different era?
Well, first tell me, do you believe in it?
Yes, I do.
Why?
Because I have proof.
And what's your proof?
For the past 3 weeks, I've had a dream. A recurrent dream, always exact, down to the tiniest detail.
And what's the substance of that dream?
The substance, Dr. Brewster, is that I'm a murderer. You don't believe me, do you?
I don't know what to say.
I tell you, it's the truth. I'm a murderer, Dr. Brewster. It's come back to me again and again, night after night. The dagger. His blood on the chair in the palace.
Did you recognize your victim?
Yes.
Well, who was he?
His name was the Normand de Troyes. He was married to the Marquise de Pompadour.
Marquise de Pompadour? Good heavens. That woman's been dead for almost 200 years.
I know. And she was beautiful. I loved her, Dr. Brewster, and I gave my life for her. Oh, I know, I sound like a maniac. Well, maybe I am. Sometimes I wonder myself. And yet I can't get over it, that feeling of having lived during the reign of Louis XV, of having been in love with Madame Pompadour, and of having murdered her husband.
John, listen to me. Go to a psychiatrist.
I don't need a psychiatrist, Dr. Brewster. I have to work this out for myself in some way.
But if you go on like this, do you know where it might end?
For Jean? I know. In unhappiness. But I can't help myself. As wretched as I feel about her part in it.
And for you, John? Do you know what the ending might be for you?
Murder will out, Dr. Brewster. And the only ending for a murderer is the hangman's noose.
You've only one hope, Jean. You've got to get his mind away from the past. You've got to make him realize he lives in the present, that today is what counts.
We used to have such fun together. Now I hardly see him.
Try to relive those moments with him. Take him to the theater, the art museums. Do what you used to do. And make him forget about himself.
I'll try, Dr. Brewster. I'll try very hard.
And Jean did try, with all her strength and all her heart. She tried to hold the man she loved, to keep him from leaving her forever. And for a while it seemed she might succeed. For a short time, John forgot his dreams and his strange compulsions. Until one day in an art museum, as he and Jean walked slowly through the marble corridors.
John, look at this Vermeer. Oh, isn't it exquisite?
Yes, it is. He was a great artist, Jean. Everything about his work showed genius. Let's look at the cars. Look at the... What are you smiling at?
Nothing. It's just that I'm so happy.
You are?
These last few weeks have been so different. We've come closer together again. Oh, darling, you're the John I know and fell in love with.
Now, let's see what's in that room, shall we?
Oh, it's only furniture. I'd rather see the rest of the oils. But if you want to see it, darling...
Yes, I do. Come into that room with me, Jean, please.
It's a French living room. Furniture's antique.
Yes.
Why, it says here... This room was occupied by... Louis XV.
I've been inside it before, Jean.
Here, in the museum?
No.
What do you mean, John?
Now, I remember this furniture, when it was new.
What?
I'll show you what I do. I remember every piece. Every piece. You see that cabinet in the corner?
Well?
Open it.
We're not supposed to touch them.
Open it, Jean. It may prove something. If you find a dagger inside that cabinet, a bloodstained dagger, I know I'm right.
John, please.
Open it, Jean.
All right.
You found it.
Yes.
I put it there.
John, let's get out of here.
No, I've got to stay.
John, if you love me at all... What are you doing?
The blood is still here on the chair. I'll never forget the blood.
John, please take me home.
Look, Jean, that painting on the wall. Do you know who she is?
No.
Jean-Antoinette Poisson, Marquise de Pompadour. The most beautiful woman who ever lived.
You stare at that picture like... a man in love.
I was years ago. Odd, isn't it? Her first name. And yours. But the same, I mean.
John!
If you don't mind, Gina, I want to stay here alone for a while. With the woman I love.
John stood there for a long moment after Jean had gone, staring up at the beautiful portrait. I watched him from my perch above the high French cabinet. Then I spoke.
What?
I said hello.
Who are you? Where are you?
It isn't necessary for you to see me. We've met before.
Have we?
At least you think we have. I was around in Louis's time, and I knew the Marquise very well.
To know her was to love her.
Perhaps. However, your memory may not be what you think it is.
How do you mean?
You'd like to return, wouldn't you? You'd like to go back a couple of hundred years.
More than anything else in the world.
Are you sure you won't regret it?
I'll take that chance. It's the only thing that can save me now. I've got to know the truth.
What time do you have?
Oh, it's 4:10.
You're slow by 5 minutes.
Well?
I'm going to add 200 years to that 5 minutes. I'm going to make that timepiece in your wrist run slow by 2 centuries.
What are you doing? What's happening to me?
You're going back, my friend, to the Marquise de Pompadour. And I wish you a pleasant journey.
Just a moment.
Well, the door was locked. For a moment, I thought something had happened to you.
Who are you?
Who am I? What is wrong with you? I'm Charles de Port, secretary to the Marquise. That's who I am.
Secretary to the Marquise? The Marquise de Pompadour?
Naturally.
But then, I must be in Versailles, the palace of Versailles.
Perhaps you need a doctor, monsieur. You seemed quite well a few moments ago when I went to inform the Marquise of your arrival. But now...
I'm quite all right. Just a fainting spell. I've had them occasionally.
A fainting spell? Hmm. Well, I hope you don't faint when you see the Marquise. She doesn't have too much respect for men who behave like kittens.
Just leave me to her, Deport. And see how I behave.
This is a great honor, madame.
You may rise, monsieur. It'll be au depot.
Very well, madame.
To what do I owe this privilege, madame?
To your prowess as a servant, perhaps? Or to your reputation with the ladies?
The ladies, madame?
Come now, you can relax with me. I'm a commoner just as you are, by birth.
You're also the most beautiful woman I have ever seen in my life.
If Louis should hear you, your life would be a short one.
It's worth the risk.
You're very gallant. It goes well with your reputation.
My reputation seems to have traveled a great deal farther than I have.
I brought you here to offer you an opportunity. I would like you to become my personal bodyguard.
Your protector, madame.
My protector, defender, and companion.
Nothing would please me more.
Think well before you answer. My demands may be rather dangerous at times.
Danger doesn't worry me.
I have enemies.
You enemies?
Yes. There is one who I'm very much afraid of.
And who is that?
My husband. Or should I say, my ex-husband. As you know, we were divorced. Le Lomond seemed to feel that my friendship with the king was damaging to his reputation. Idiotic, isn't he?
Very, madame.
However, I'm sure you can handle him. I'm going to ask that you be transferred from the king's guard. I can arrange it. I can arrange practically anything in France.
So I've heard. If you hadn't died as you did at the age of 43, France might have become...
What?
Oh, I beg your pardon. That was a silly thing to say.
What on earth are you talking about? I am only 30 now. What is this nonsense about my death at 43?
Oh, please forgive me, madame.
Do you set yourself up to be a seer?
I might surprise you, madame.
What kind of a trick are you playing, monsieur?
No trick, madame. I have hunches, that's all.
Hunches?
Well, it's purely guesswork. But it's not guesswork when I tell you that I would lay down my life for you. Gladly.
Would you?
Yes.
I'm glad you said that, monsieur.
You are, madame.
Yes. For I may give you the chance.
Monsieur de Port?
Well, monsieur?
The Marquise has given orders for me to be quartered here in the palace.
Oh.
I am to have the West Suite.
Ah, the West Suite, no less. She favors you, monsieur. Come this way.
I presume there's a bath attached.
What did you say?
A bath. A tub or a shower. I want to have one in my suite.
But that's ridiculous.
It is?
This is only March.
March? What, do you mean to say...
A little perfume will make you feel better.
Perfume my foot. I want a bath with soap.
But baths are not in season now.
Did you hear what I said, Duport?
Whatever you wish, monsieur. It's, your skin. John?
What?
Were you speaking to me, monsieur?
Duport can't hear me, John, but you can.
Oh, I see.
I beg your pardon, monsieur.
Get rid of Duport, John. I want to talk to you alone.
I was thinking of taking a bath.
The bath can wait.
Whom are you speaking to, monsieur? Why are you looking behind you? There's no one there.
Oh, I'll be with you in just a few minutes, Duport. Wait for me in the next corridor.
Oh, very well, sir. The man is mad.
Well, John, how do you like it? How does it feel to live in the 18th century?
It's a fantastic experience. It's something I've always wanted to do.
You mean you don't want to go back?
Never. Not as long as she is alive.
You're speaking of Madame de Pompadour.
Yes.
John, you're making a big mistake.
It's my life. I can do what I like with it.
See it yourself. I promise I won't ask you again. But I suggest you keep your dream in mind.
My dream?
You were a murderer in that dream, John. It was a dream you couldn't escape. And the man you believed you murdered was the husband of Madame Pompadour. The man she wants you to guard her against.
Well, what about it?
Nothing. I was just wondering if history would repeat itself in reverse.
To ride early in the morning. It makes the blood pour through my veins with new strength.
I could ride this way for the rest of my life with you.
Careful. They say that even the horses are loyal to the king. You're so ardent.
I love you. I can't keep it to myself any longer. Just one kiss, please.
One kiss. And what would you give for one kiss?
Anything you ask.
Come closer, darling. There, you've had your kiss. And as far as payment is concerned, I intend to exact it shortly.
You sent for me, Jean?
The time has come for you to prove yourself.
What do you want me to do?
My husband, the normal, is trying to blackmail me.
Yes?
He knows about us, and he intends to tell the king. You've got to stop him.
Don't worry about it. I'll handle him.
How?
I'll give him 2 days to get out of France.
Oh, that won't do. You don't know what he's like, Georges. He hates me. He's even threatened to take my life. And he has agents, men who would murder for a sou. As long as he lives, Georges, I'll have no peace. You've got to kill him tonight.
But surely there must be another way, Jean.
Can it be that you are afraid?
You know better than that.
I only know that you can't possibly love me if you permit Lalomo to live. You'll never see me again if you do.
John.
I mean that. Oh, my darling. My darling, you've got to help me. He terrifies me. Please don't fail me now.
Where can I find this Lalomo?
I've asked him to come to the castle tonight. The king is in Paris. You can deal with him here as you like. Will you do it for me?
Let me know when he arrives.
Here, take this ring. It will bring you luck. Do you see this inscription on the inside?
Pompadour.
Wear it on your finger. Wear it on the hand that holds the sword.
As you can see, no matter what period of history, time is always the same. And so are the men and women.
He has entered the palace, Monsieur Lefebvre. He'll come through this corridor in a moment or two.
And have his chance to draw his sword.
His sword? Are you crazy? A duel would bring a household down on you. You've got to use his dagger and use it quickly before he can utter a sound.
You mean stab him in the back?
Yes.
But that's murder in cold blood.
That's the way it must be done. You take it. We can wait behind these portières. As he passes, let him have it.
No, wait.
Here it comes. No, not this way. I can't.
Give me the dagger.
With the compliments of the Marquis.
Quick, before the guards come, take this dagger and hide it in the cabinet.
He never had a chance. You.
Quiet! It is her ladyship.
What is this?
Oh! Oh, no, no! No, 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 speak to me!
He's dead, madame. Dead. And his murderer is over there.
You're lying, Duport. You killed him yourself.
Silence! So, this is the way you repay my trust in you, Monsieur Lefebvre.
Jeanne, you...
How dare you address me that way?
No, you can't be serious.
Keep him under arrest. Monsieur Lefebvre, I see that you get the guillotine for this. Take him away!
Good evening, Monsieur Lefebvre.
What? Where is the Marquise?
Oh, the Marquise is not in the habit of visiting cockroaches in a dungeon. She sent me in her place. What is it you wish?
Nothing. I shouldn't have asked her to come. I should have known she'd refuse.
At dawn, you will die, monsieur. May I offer my apologies?
If I could get at your throat!
Save your strength, monsieur. You will need it to climb the guillotine steps. The fact that it was I who killed Lenormand is unimportant. Had you killed him yourself in fair fight, you would still be on your way to your grave.
You mean she'd planned it so that I...
Naturally. You don't think for one moment that she wanted you around after your job was finished?
Then she was just using me.
Lenormand was still her husband. They were never actually divorced. And that was a nuisance to her ladyship, inasmuch as she had other plans. Plans which concerned the king.
So that's what really happened.
I beg your pardon?
And I thought that I was a murderer. But I'm not, you see, I'm not.
You have a very peculiar sense of humor, monsieur.
You don't understand, you fool. You can't hurt me. I can go back. I can... Well, can I? Is it too late? Is it too late?
It is never too late, monsieur, for Madame Guillotine.
We are ready, Monsieur Lefebvre. Before I give the signal and your head rolls, is there anything you wish to say?
Yes. I have a friend somewhere who brought me here. Where are you? I want to go back. You were right. Please take me back. Please take me back.
Have you learned your lesson, John?
Just give me one more chance, that's all I ask. Just one more chance. One more chance.
Executioner, do your duty.
What? Oh. Was it you, Jean?
I had to come back. I couldn't leave you here like this.
Jean.
You never say you've been ill. You haven't moved from this spot since I left the museum.
Ill? I'm well, Jean. I'm well and I'd come back to you.
John.
I was wrong about everything. I'm not a murderer, Jean. Really, I'm not. And I'll never have those dreams again.
And what about her? That woman in the portrait up there, the Marquise de Pompadour.
The Marquise? She's just as dead, Jean, as my love for her. She's part of the past, that's all. And I'm here in the present with you.
Well, there's your story. What's that? The events are not historically correct. I agree with you. According to the history books, it didn't quite happen that way. But then, historians deal with important facts. And you must admit that a mere romance could have been omitted by the textbooks. However, there's just one more thing. I was still there when John and Jean left the museum arm in arm. As he walked out of the room, he accidentally dropped a small metal object on the floor. It was a ring. A large ring that may have been worn by a woman. And there was one word inscribed in the band. That word was Pompadour.
The Clock will be heard again next week, same time, same station. This program was written by Lawrence Klee and narrated by Harp McGuire as The Clock. As John, you heard Charles Tingwell. Others were Coralie Neville, John Bushell, Sheila Sewell, David Butler. The Clock directed by John Saul, is a Grace Gibson Radio production.
And the Clock and the Man Who Lived Once Before. We'll go from there right over to the Diary of Fate. I told you this was going to be scary. This one's called Walter Vincent Entry, and it's from 1948.
The Diary of Fate. Fate plays no favorites. It could happen to you.
Book 97, page 854.
In The Diary of Fate.
Yes, here it is. The name Walter Vincent. Occupation, chemist. Yes, Walter. For 4 years, you have been an employee of the Randall Foundation for scientific research. And in that time, you have come to realize how wrong you were to select science as a life work. Although you were diligent and accurate, you lack inventiveness. And many times during recent months, your wife Carol has pointed out in no uncertain terms the long and fruitless road which lies ahead of you. This realization brought you to temptation and a choice. Now, for a moment, I, Fate, look ahead to a single instant in your life. An instant of decision.
I don't intend to give up everything now, Walter, no matter what it means.
Good. We still have a chance if we work together. You see, Kramer is going to give Philip that letter at the masquerade.
I don't understand, Walter.
And that means just one thing. I'll have to go to the masquerade in his place. And I'll have to get rid of Philip.
In that decision, Walter Vincent, you will find your goal and your destruction. Soon it will be time for a further entry under your name. When I have written, I will read from the record of Walter Vincent in the Diary of Fate. Walter Vincent, an infamous decision was made. Yet in the final analysis, it was a little thing, seemingly insignificant, that determined the inevitable outcome. It is ever thus. Remember, Walter Vincent, where it all started? You were driving home from the funeral of Professor Rudolf Teigman, an associate of the Foundation, who had died suddenly of a heart attack. Your wife and Philip Webb, also a chemist at the Foundation, were talking as you drove through the heavy rain.
He was a great scientist, old Teigman. The Foundation is certainly going to miss him.
Strange, isn't it? How suddenly and unexpectedly it can happen. Just like that, and it's all over.
Yeah, that's right, Carol.
I only hope I can achieve half as much in my life as he did in his. I'd consider it a lifetime well spent.
What? How can you say that, Philip? Professor Teigman was a lonely old man. He never really lived in his whole life. He never had any money or fun. Just work and more work. That's all he knew.
Yes, but look at all the splendid things he accomplished.
And where did that get him? I'll bet he wished plenty of times he'd enjoyed life more as he went along. Believe me, I'm not going to stake my happiness on a future I may never see.
Oh, excuse me, Carol. This next corner will be fine, Walter.
Oh, okay, Phil. Glad to drive you on home, though.
No, thanks. But there is one thing.
Yeah?
I'm going out to Teigman's lab tomorrow, and I'd appreciate it if you'd come along and sort of help me put his things in order out there.
Why, sure, Phil. Glad to.
Fine. See you tomorrow, then. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Walter, I meant what I said about that future. I'm completely fed up with the way we live.
Oh, Carol, darling, don't talk like that. We'll get our chance one of these days.
One of these days can be a long, long time. I'm not going to wait much longer.
Well, you won't have to, honey. With Tigman gone, there are openings all down the line. And I'm almost a cinch to head my department.
Well? We'll see, Walter. We'll see.
Yes, Walter. A pressing impatience in Carol's heart is like a whip to your ambition. It caused you to do anything to make her happy. But the next morning, when the promotions were announced, the one you expected went to Philip. It was a humiliating shock to you. And you knew how Carol would take it. By the time you arrived at Tigman's remote laboratory, you had regained control of yourself. And nothing was said at the promotion as you helped Philip pack the clutter of apparatus, supplies, and papers. And then, Walter, a little thing happened.
I guess you can get most of that stuff in this box, Walter.
Yes, I think so. By the way, what was Tigman working on, Phil, do you know?
I have no idea. I used to be his assistant, but for the last 6 months, they had me back in the office. I hope there's something in these papers that'll tell us.
Yeah. Well, I'll make a list of everything I put in this box.
Fine. I'll go get something to carry the books in.
Yeah. Oh, blast it anyway.
What happened?
Oh, my pen had leaked. I've smeared ink all over.
Oh, there's probably a blotter in that bottom drawer of the desk. Be back in a minute.
You open the desk drawer, Walter. And as you searched for a blotter, your eyes fell on something else. Something destined to change your entire life. A notebook. At one glance, you realized what was in it. The results of the last 6 months of intense research by the great Tigman. A completely revolutionary method of cracking crude oil. You heard Philip returning, and quickly, you slipped the notebook into your pocket and turned to face him.
Oh, by the way, Phil, I haven't congratulated you on your promotion yet. I think it's great.
Thanks, Walter. I appreciate that. It was between us, you know, and, well, I thought maybe you'd...
Oh, I'd resent it? No, not me. You make a better executive than I anyway. I'd be lost out of the lab.
Oh, thank you, Walter. I'm taking my vacation soon, and when I get back, let's get together, huh?
Sure.
Oh, by the way, what are you working on, Walter?
Petroleum. Yes, and I think I may have something, too. Or don't say anything about it, Phil. You see, I'm not sure yet, but if I'm on the right track, it'll be big. Very big.
Yes, Walter. Because of a leaking fountain pen, you alone had found Tigman's notebook. You could have turned it over to the Foundation. But you had other ideas. In the days that passed, you made certain that nowhere else among Tigman's papers was there a hint of what he had been working on. You checked and tested his formula. It was complete and accurate. Then, at last, you were ready. The startling announcement came out that you, Walter Vincent, had devised a new and revolutionary method for refining crude oil.
This is amazing, Walter. As the director of the Randall Foundation, I congratulate you. And leave it to me, my boy. I'll see to it that you get a position at once where you can really exercise your ability.
Well, thank you, Dr. Crane.
And congratulations, Walter.
Thank you.
That was great publicity for the outfit. And say, I want you to pose with Dr. Kramer here, and then we'll get some individual portraits, some action shots of you in the lab, too. You know, the papers are going to eat this up.
Yes. Just 3 short weeks after you had stolen Professor Tigman's notebook, Walter, Your world was completely changed. You had a new job at more than double your old salary. You were known in scientific circles as a very promising young man. And Carol, of course, was delighted. But the change, Walter, had been brought about by your choice for evil. And already forces were gathering against you. Even as you relished your newfound glory, and Carol chattered happily about a forthcoming party, another little thing happened.
Oh, Walter, this will be the first party we've gone to in years where I can really feel like somebody.
Yes, I know. Well, I told you our break would come one day.
Oh, I'm glad it's a masquerade. I've got the most wonderful idea for a costume. Marie Antoinette.
Oh?
But, well, it's going to be expensive.
Oh, darling, I don't care if it is. We can afford it now, and if it'll make you happy, you... Oh, I'll get it, Carol. Hello? Walter Vincent speaking.
This is Dr. Kramer, Walter. Do you know when Philip Webb is coming back from his vacation?
Oh, the day after tomorrow, I think, Doctor.
Oh, that's too bad.
Why? What's the matter, Doctor?
Well, I'm leaving town tonight, and I wanted to see him before I left. A very strange thing just happened, Walter. It was like getting a message from the grave.
A message from the grave? What do you mean, Doctor?
An envelope addressed to Philip just arrived. It was evidently lost in the mail. You see, it's from Professor Tyson. It must be about the work he was doing when he died.
Yes, Walter. A little thing. A misaddressed envelope. A letter lost in the mail now suddenly loomed up in your life as a huge stumbling block that would topple your whole world into ruin. You knew that somehow you had to get that letter or you were trapped. But you realized that the first thing you had to do was tell Carol. Tell her the whole thing. You had to know if you could depend on her.
And that's the way it happened, Carol. That's the whole story. Well, don't just stand there. Say something.
It's such a shock. I don't know what to say. You've got to get that letter, Walter. Some way, you've got to get it.
That's what I wanted you to say, Carol. I had to know if I could count on your help.
I don't intend to give up everything now, Walter. No matter what it means.
Good. We still have a chance, if we work together. You see, Kramer is going to give Philip that letter at the dance.
I don't understand,
Walter. And that means one thing. I'll have to go to the masquerade in his place. And I'll have to get rid of Philip.
Yes, Walter. Because of a fountain pen that leaked. A little thing. You were faced with a decision. And your choice was for evil. Now, because of another little thing, a misaddressed envelope, you were threatened with exposure and disgrace. A net of circumstances was closing around you. Soon there would be no escape. Soon, I will write again under your name in the Diary of Fate. Tense, worried days later, but you, Walter, finally added the last detail to your method of murder. Philip had returned from his vacation, and you had talked to him. Then you explained your scheme to Carol.
Oh, Walter, I'm afraid. Are you sure there's no other way?
Positive. I've looked for that letter every place I possibly could since Kramer's been gone. I can't find it. There's nothing else we can do.
All right, Walter.
Now listen, I've talked to Philip. He's going to the masquerade as Pinocchio. He's got a mask that covers the whole head, and it'll fit me. I told him today that I had to go to New York, so he thinks you're going to the dance with him. I want to be sure a lot of people know that.
Well, that'll be easy. Then what?
Saturday evening, I'll get on the train here and get off when it stops at Maplewood. You meet me there with the car.
And bring you back here?
Yes. Then I'll take care of Philip. We'll go to the dance, get the letter from Kramer, and leave. I'll catch a plane. I've already got the reservation under the name of Jones. I'll overtake the train and get back on it. All you know is that Phil was a little high when he took you home.
Oh, Walter, what if something goes wrong?
Nothing can go wrong, I tell you. Not if we're careful and use our heads. The hardest time will be the dance. We'll really have to play our parts there. And play them well.
Yes, Walter. From now on, you'd have to play a part. And play it well. For murder is a hazardous game. Where they would do the most good, you drop casual bits of information about your trip to New York. And that Philip was escorting Carol to the dance. And finally, on Saturday night, you even fixed it so David Sloan, the Foundation's public relations man, was at the station with Carol to see you off.
So if you can drop in and see him, it'll be worth a feature story in his new magazine.
Well, I'll certainly try, David. It all depends on how much time I have.
Well, Mr. Vincent, busy or not, you better find time somewhere to write me every day. Understand?
Sorry you're going to miss that masquerade tonight, old boy. That's the one thing nobody really should miss.
Don't I know it. And I'm sending Carol with Philip Webb. Pinocchio and Marie Antoinette should make quite a pair. Hey, you think I can trust them together?
I think so. Pinocchio's made of wood, you know.
Yes, but there are no strings on him either.
Well, I'll keep an eye on them, Walter. Have a good time in the city and hurry back.
I will, David. Better get aboard, Carol. Now, don't forget, one block south of the station at Maplewood. And don't be late.
I won't, don't worry. I'll get rid of David and leave right away.
As the train traveled a few miles to Maplewood, you talked with the porter about your compartment, tipped him lavishly, spoke to the conductor, and made certain that several of the passengers were aware of your presence and would remember you. Then, as the train pulled to a stop in Maplewood, you stepped off quickly, quietly, melted into the crowd. A few minutes later, you were with Carol in your car, speeding back the way you had come.
Better slow down a little, Carol.
We have to hurry, Walter.
Slow down, I said. All we need right now is to be picked up for speeding. That'd fix things fine.
When we get to Phillips, shall I wait for you?
No. Go on home, put on your costume. I'll pick you up in his car.
All right. We're almost there. It's down on the next block.
Okay, turn here and stop. I'll walk the rest of the way.
Walter.
What?
Walter, be careful.
Don't worry, this will be easy. The tough part's going to be that dance afterwards, and don't forget that for a minute. I'll go on home and get dressed. I got to get going.
What is... Why, Walter, I thought you were on your way to New York.
Well, I'm supposed to be. You're still going to the dance, aren't you?
Of course. I'm just dressing now.
Well, let me in, Philip. Yeah, I got to talk to you.
Sure, come in. What is it, Walter? What's wrong?
Is anyone else here now?
No. Walter, what's the matter?
Philip, are you going to be alone tomorrow?
Why, yes. Yes, I am.
All day? You're not expecting anyone? Not going out?
No, not until 9 tomorrow night. Why?
Oh, that's fine, fine. Philip, I'm in a jam. Bad one. I want to stay here tonight. Could you help me out?
Now, wait a minute. I think you'd better start at the beginning and tell me all about it.
All right, but... Oh, is that whiskey there in the decanter? I really need a drink, Phil.
Well, I'll get it for you. I've never seen you like this, Walter. You're in bad shape. Oh, here you are.
Thanks. Well, Philip, it's like this. Oh, the glass. I'm sorry, Phil. It slipped.
Oh, forget it. You'd better sit down, Walter. I'll pick up the pieces. It's nothing. Go on, sit down, Walter. Walter, the poker, what are you...
Yes, Walter. Killing Philip was simple. For a moment you stared down at him, lying dead in front of his fireplace. Then you moved quickly. You took his keys from his pocket, set his watch ahead to midnight and smashed the crystal. Arranged the room to look as if he had fallen and struck his head while replacing a light bulb in the chandelier. Then you entered his bedroom. And when you came out again, you were Philip Webb, fully dressed in the bizarre costume of Pinocchio. A few minutes later, in Philip's car, you picked up Carol and drove to the masquerade.
Walter, you're sure everything's all right? You didn't make any mistake.
No, I didn't. Now stop worrying me, will you? You keep watching me in there, and just as soon as I get that letter from Dr. Kramer, you fake a headache so we can leave.
All right.
And don't let me get stuck with anybody where I have to talk too much.
I won't.
All right. We better go on in. And for heaven's sake, act like nothing's happened. Everything depends on this now.
Well, I'll be. Pinocchio, you old rascal. Get up, terrific.
Oh, you like it?
Phil, that's a wonderful costume. I got to get a picture of that one. What a head and what a face.
I told him it was going to be the best in the place.
That's great, Carol. It really is. Say, you're rather pretty good yourself, Marie Antoinette.
Thank you.
Sure, too bad old Walter had to miss this party. We're really going to have a time tonight.
Kramer hasn't shown up yet, Carol, but he should be here any minute. How am I doing? Heard your comment?
You're doing fine. I don't think anybody suspects a thing. Just keep it up.
Don't worry, I will. We can't slip now.
Oh, Philip, pardon me, folks. Phil, Dr. Kramer just came in. He wants to see you a minute. He's back there in the corner.
Oh, thanks a lot, David. I'll go right away.
I'll wait for you here, Philip.
Well, hello there, Philip, or should I say Pinocchio. That certainly is a fine costume.
Oh, hello, Dr. Kramer.
What I wanted to see you about, Philip, is a letter. It was lost in the mail, I presume. You see, it's for you, from Professor Tigman.
From Tigman?
Yes, I have it here. Do you want it now? I can just easily keep it until Monday.
No, I'll take it now, Doctor, and thank you very much.
Oh, Philip.
Excuse me, Doctor. Yes, Carol?
I'm sorry, but my head is splitting. Would you mind taking me home?
Oh, that's too bad, Carol. Of course not. Come along.
I've got it, Carol. I've got the letter. Now nobody will ever know. Now we're set for life.
Yes, Walter, it was all over now. You had the letter. The perfect alibi for murder. All you had to do was leave the dance, get back on the train, and you were safe. But take heed, you who listen, lest you think fate unjust, a conspirator in evil. In a few moments, I will write for the last time under the name Walter Vincent. When I have written, I will read from the Diary of Fate. You and Carol moved toward the door of the ballroom. You were confident that your masquerade had been successful. Yes, your impersonation of Philip Webb had been perfect. At Now safety lay only a few feet away. But then, Walter, another little thing happened.
Let's get going, Carl.
Oh, my heel.
Carol, what's the matter?
The heel of my slipper had broken, caught in my skirt.
Let me get it.
Attention, ladies and gentlemen. Here's the high spot of the evening. Yes, friends, this has been a wonderful party. And now, hey, wait a minute. Don't let that Pinocchio get away.
Hold it.
I've got a big surprise for you. You can't leave now.
I've got to leave.
The judges' committee has selected the outstanding masquerader of the evening, none other than Pinocchio. Now, folks, it's midnight. And you're first, my boy, so remove your mask, Pinocchio, and take a bow, Mr. Philip Webb.
Remove your mask? No!
Come on, folks. He's back. We'll give you a hand, Phil.
Come on, stop it!
I got it all.
Why, it's not Phil Webb. It's Walter Vincent.
Yes, Walter. Your masquerade was perfect. So perfect that you won first prize and destroyed your own alibi. And now, as the seconds tick away inexorably toward the moment of your execution for murder, your wife, Carol, for her part in the crime, sits alone in her prison cell, waiting hopelessly for an empty future. And now it is time to close the book. Another entry has been duly noted on the pages of eternity, and justice has been served. In the case of Walter Vincent, as in the cases of all mortals, I, fate, am but the instrument of a plan. And the countless little things that happen are the tools with which I work. Because of a fountain pen that leaked, this man, Walter Vincent, was given an opportunity, and he chose for evil. Then, because the heel of a slipper broke and delayed his escape for a few critical seconds, I, fate, brought him to justice. Ponder well the moral, you who listen. And remember, there is a page for you in the diary of fate.
Cast included Herbert Litton, Tom Brown, Gloria Blondell, Peter Leeds, John Arthur, Ray Erlenborn, Ivan Dittmars, and Hal Sawyer. Diary of Fate is a Larry Finley transcription. Brought to you from Hollywood.
And now for our third episode of Horror, Terror, what have you. It's the Hall of Fantasy and The Strange Revenge from 1953.
And now, the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friends. We shall descend the world of the unknown and forbidden, down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural reigns as king. Come with me and listen to the tale of Stone's Revenge.
He let him stay out there in the freezing cold, pounding on the door and yelling, "Let me in!" Monroe's daughter tried to let him in, but the old man wouldn't let her. So Jeff stayed there in the freezing cold, and the girl heard him say,
"I'll make you pay for this, Monroe. For as long as Monroe lives, I'll make you pay."
And that's the end of the story?
Yeah, not by a long shot, young fella. Ever since that time, people have died who stayed in that cabin. People up here say they've heard him pound on the door and yell, "Now let me in." And when they do let him in, they die. Real strange-like, they die.
The Hall of Fantasy will present Stone's Revenge in just a moment. And now for our story, an original tale of fantasy entitled Stone's Revenge.
Jim Loring was my best friend. His sister Betty more than my friend, for we were set to be married the following November. We'd all been working pretty hard, and we figured we needed a rest, so we took a 2 weeks vacation and headed up north. Before we left the city, Jim rented a cabin from a real estate broker about 400 miles north of here. We left about 3 in the morning and drove steadily.
Hey, what time is it?
11:30.
Oh, we've made good time.
Yeah, that's right. According to the last marker we saw, we ought to be pulling into Wood Lake in a few minutes.
How far is the cabin from town, Jim?
Well, Gehring, the real estate man, said it was about 6 miles out of town.
You're sure he said there were fish in that lake?
Some of the best fishing in the state. That's what he said.
That's what they all say.
We'll have to stop in town and pick up plenty of food.
That's right. Enough to hold us for a few days, anyway.
Oh, look, up ahead. I think we're coming to it.
Oh, we are. It says, you see, a Wood Lake, population 709.
Hey, big town.
Better slow down. You know these small towns.
Yeah. The broker in the city said I could get the key to the cabin from the sheriff. It seems he also owns a store here, Sheldon's General Store.
Well, if that's the case, we might as well pick up our food there.
Yeah, might as well.
Hey, look, there it is.
Huh? Oh, yeah, I see it.
Oh, open that door in a hurry. I just hope my muscles haven't frozen in this position.
Oh, that feels great.
Oh, boy. Beautiful day, isn't it?
Weather report said we're in for a storm tonight, though.
Oh? Well, maybe it'll blow over by tomorrow.
Oh, it's nice and cool in here.
Yeah, anything would be cool after driving in that hot sun.
Ah, it doesn't seem to be... Well, yes, there is, leaning back in that chair with a paper over his face. Look.
He's sound asleep.
Pretty alert fellow, isn't he?
Yeah.
I heard that, young fella.
I was only joking.
Don't you worry none, son. I can take a joke as well as the next one. You'd be wanting something, maybe?
Yes, we rented a cabin up here, and we need some food.
And you come to the right place. Yes, sir. Now, what can I do you for?
You'd better take charge here, Betty.
All right. Well, let's see. We'll need some eggs. About 2 dozen.
Coming right up. Yeah. You come in fresh this morning? Where do you stay?
Oh, the old Monroe place. A real estate man in the city said we could pick up the key from you.
Yep, I got the key, all right. Yeah, what else, ma'am?
Well, let's see, some bacon, a pound of coffee, pancake flour,
potatoes,
oranges, some cream, sandwich.
Wait a minute. Hold on, ma'am. I got what you said, but don't say no more, because if you do, I'll forget everything. So, you're staying at the old Monroe place, huh?
That's right.
Let's see now. Coffee, flour. You got a 5-pound sack of potatoes here.
Oh, that'll be fine.
Yeah. Go over there and help yourself to some oranges, ma'am, and anything else you see. Just pick it up and set it on the counter here.
All right. I guess that will be the easiest way.
Yeah. So you're staying at the old Monroe place, huh?
You said that once before.
Yeah, I know it. I just wanted to be sure I was hearing right.
Well, your hearing's all right, Sheriff. By the way, may we have the key?
Sure enough. It's right here under the counter. Yeah, long time since that cabin's been rented.
Oh? How come?
People just don't like to go up there.
Oh, why not? Anything wrong with it?
Not exactly. It's still the best cabin around these parts. Got a nice refrigerator. Indoor plumbing. Real nice place. But you oughtn't to go up there.
Why?
Because of old Jeff Stone. People around here say they seen him up there.
Oh, he won't bother us.
Don't you count on that, young feller.
Look, if he comes around the cabin, we'll ask him to leave.
Only leaving, that'll be done. It'll be done by you.
Why? Is he dangerous?
Yeah, he's dangerous. And he's dead, too.
What do you mean?
Just what I said.
Well, you can't expect us to believe...
I don't expect you to believe nothing. I'm just telling you what I know for a fact.
The real estate man didn't say anything
about... He's only interested in renting it. Now, you listen to what I gotta say.
So I don't think...
Let him talk to you.
Thank you. I'll tell you about what happened up there. About 15 years ago, it was. Old man Monroe hated Jeff Stone. Used to make life miserable for Jeff. And Jeff used to come in here and say that he was going to get even someday. And the hatred inside him would come out on the surface. And it even made me afraid. It was the winter time when it happened. Old man Monroe was in his cabin and there was a big storm outside. One of the worst we ever had up here. His daughter was with him. She was the one who told me what happened. Jeff got himself caught outside in that storm. He knew the only place he could reach was old man Monroe's cabin. So he fought his way through the blizzard, and he got to the cabin half froze. Yeah, he pounded on the door.
Let me in!
Old Monroe knew it was Jeff outside. He wouldn't open that door. He let him stay out there in the freezing cold, pounding on the door and yelling, Let me in! Well, Monroe's daughter tried to let him in, but the old man wouldn't let her. So Jeff stayed out there and froze to death. But just before he stopped yelling, the girl heard him say...
I'll make you pay for this, Monroe. For as long as Monroe lives, I'll make you pay.
Yes, sirree. In the morning, when the storm was over, they went outside and found him frozen to death.
And that's the end of the story?
Yeah, not by a long shot, young fella. Ever since that time, people have died who stayed in that cabin. First Monroe's daughter, then him, and then others. Anybody who went up there. People up here say they've heard him pounding on the door and yelling, let me in. And when the folks in the cabin let him in, they die. Real strange-like, they die.
We'll return to the Hall of Fantasy and the tale of Stone's Revenge in just a moment. Back now to the Hall of Fantasy and the tale of Stone's Revenge.
The sheriff leaned across the counter as he spoke to us. Even though the day was warm, I could feel a chill creep over me as he told us the story of one man's revenge.
So I wouldn't go up there if I was you.
Certainly a frightening story.
Yep, sure is.
Is there any other cabin around here for rent?
Well, it's been a busy season up here. Most of the places got people living in them. I got a place, though, I could let you have. Not too bad a place. Let you have it mighty cheap.
Maybe we ought to...
Nonsense. No, we'll go up to the cabin.
Well, it's all right with me.
Well, I think that about does it, Sheriff Sheldon.
All right, let me see now. 95 for coffee, 57 for bacon.
Are you sure we have everything we need?
Well, as long as you two manage to catch a few fish we have. If you don't, then we'll be making quite a few trips in town.
Wait till we get out in the boat.
I'll wait until I get the fish into the pan.
Yeah, it comes to $11.92. You can check my figures if you want to.
Oh, no, we trust you, Sheriff, here.
Yep, out of 12. Yes, really. Always good to have a little business on the side, like this here store. Here's your change.
Thank you, sir.
Look, you're sure you don't want to go to my cabin, huh?
Well, we're sure.
Well, I warned you, You're walking in with your eyes open. I hope you walk out that way. That is, alive.
Certainly is far enough away from everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's a good thing we have a map or we'd be lost.
Hey, look, I can see it.
Huh? Yeah, hey, so do I. Yeah, it looks pretty nice.
Oh, and there's the lake. Oh, it's beautiful. Hey,
can I pick him or can I pick him?
Oh, this lake is so hard to get to that I bet it hasn't been fished much.
I can hardly wait to get out there.
They ought to be hitting pretty well this afternoon, huh?
We'll get the boat off the trailer and whip that lake to a froth.
Jim.
Mm-hmm.
I heard that story that the sheriff was telling you. You don't think there was any truth to it, do you?
Of course not. You notice when he finished, he said he had a place that we could rent.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Well, I did. He just wanted to talk us like coming up here. Always good to have a little business on the side, he said. I wonder how many people he's talked out of coming up here with that crazy story of his.
Yeah. Quite a few, I suppose. But it did frighten me.
We found the cabin to be in excellent condition. We moved our things in, had a bite to eat, then Jim and I unloaded the boat and went fishing, while Betty took a sunbath on the beach in front of the cabin. The big ones weren't hitting, but the panfish were, and when we came in, we had a stringer full of bluegills, crappies, and perch. Betty fixed dinner, and we had all the fish we could eat. The rest of the evening, we took it easy, listening to the radio we'd brought with us or reading. The weather report was right that day. And a little after 9 o'clock, it began to rain.
Hey, we're right about the rain.
Yeah, sounds like it'll be a good one.
I hope we don't have rain the whole time we're up here. That would be just our luck.
Hey, who turned off the radio?
I did. Nobody seemed to be listening to it.
Well, put on, will you? I want to catch the rest of the news before I turn in.
If we're going to get up early tomorrow, we'd better think about turning in.
Yeah, we'll hear the news and then call it a day.
Okay.
And that's the news of the world and the national scene. As for the local news, there's... Ladies and gentlemen, a bulletin has just been handed to me. Lawrence Graham, an inmate of the State Institution for the Criminally Insane, escaped from the grounds a little more than 2 hours ago. So far, he has not been apprehended. His description follows. 6 feet tall, gray hair and brown eyes, last seen wearing gray shirt and pants. This man is dangerous. If you see him, on no account try to apprehend him, but get in touch with the local police of your area immediately. I repeat, this man is dangerous. Be very careful.
Turn it off, Betty.
The state hospital is for the criminally insane. That's pretty close to us.
I think it's about 5 or 6 miles away.
Oh, they'll catch him. Don't worry about it. He won't get away.
I hope so.
Well, I think I'm going to turn in.
Listen.
What's the matter?
I heard something.
So did I. A crash of thunder.
No, something else. I thought I heard a voice.
Oh, nonsense.
Maybe you're right. Maybe. There it is again.
I heard it, too.
Yeah, so did I.
We'd better take a look outside.
Yeah, all right.
No, don't go outside.
We'll just stand in the doorway and see if there's anything out here.
Do you see anything?
No. Nothing.
Then come back inside.
Yeah. All right. Maybe it was someone lost in the storm.
Or maybe it was the man who escaped. Or Jeff Stone. Someone is out there.
Yes, there is something out there. We'd better go see what it is.
All right, I'll...
Let me
in!
He's outside the door.
Let me in!
Come on, let's see who it is.
Okay. Let me in. Oh, I'm glad I found you here.
What's the matter with him?
I found him lying on the ground about half a mile from here. I've been carrying him ever since.
Here, let me help you.
Put him down over here.
All right. That does it.
What's wrong with him?
I don't know.
He doesn't seem to...
What's the matter with him?
He's dead.
You are listening to the tale of Stone's Revenge on this week's journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy. We'll return to our story in just a moment. And now back to our story. entitled Stone's Revenge.
The storm was getting worse. Outside, thunder roared and the rain fell in torrents. Inside, we turned to look at each other, for a dead man was lying on the couch.
Are you sure?
There's no pulse. He's dead.
Was he dead when you found him?
No. Then he must have died while you were carrying him.
Yes. Storm's pretty bad. You'd better stay here until it blows itself out.
Thanks.
Gordon.
Yes?
Come over here a minute.
All right. What do you want?
Don't talk so loud. Do you see his clothes? Not the dead man.
What's different about them? Gray shirt and slacks?
Remember the broadcast? Gray shirt and slacks. 6 feet tall with gray hair and brown eyes. Well, that man fits the description of the one that they put out the warning about.
Hmm.
What do you think we should do?
I don't know.
The announcer said he was dangerous.
But it might not be him.
What if it is?
Hey, what are you two talking about?
We were wondering if you'd like something to eat, sir.
No.
You live around here?
At one time.
Do you know who he is?
I remember the face very well, but the name escapes me.
What's your name?
I'd rather not say.
Well,
why don't you drive into town and get some cigarettes, Gordon?
But we have...
We're almost out. I'll go right away.
But I don't...
We don't have enough, Jim.
Oh, all right, if you say so.
You ought to wear a raincoat.
No, I'll be right back. I'll get back as soon as I can with the cigarettes.
Hurry, Gordon.
Is anything wrong?
Plenty. Did you hear the broadcast about the escaped killer?
Yep.
Well, there's a man at our cabin who fits that description.
You sure?
Yeah. He came to the cabin and he was carrying a dead man.
What'd the dead man look like?
Well, blonde, nice looking fellow.
He's dead, huh?
Yeah. And we think the other man killed him.
The lunatic?
Yes.
He couldn't have.
Why?
Because he was captured a few minutes after that broadcast. You must have turned your radio off right after the bulletin.
Well, yes, we did. But, Sheriff, then, who are the men in our cabin?
The men in your cabin? I'll tell you who they are. The young one was Tom Monroe. He was going up to see you.
Tom Monroe?
Yes.
Why?
To tell you that it just wasn't a wild story I told you. To tell you to get out of that cabin before it was too late.
Then the other man is
Jeff Stone. I told Tom not to go, but he wouldn't listen to me. He said he didn't want any more people to die up there. And so he died himself.
Sheriff, Jim and Betty are still up there.
With Jeff Stone?
Yes.
Well, we're going to have to move awful fast to save him. Come on!
So slippery. I hope we can make it up to the top.
Hey, we're almost there. Keep driving.
Yes. I almost didn't make it down. I got stuck once up there.
We'll make her.
If anything's happened to them, I don't know what I...
Just pay attention to the road.
All right. Here's the spot I got stuck in before. Ah, we're not moving.
Rocker, little rocker.
Right. Ah, no. We're stuck. We're stuck good.
Then leave the car here and we'll travel the rest of the way on foot.
All right. All right. Let's get out.
I can see the lights through the trees. Come on, let's go.
All right.
It's slippery.
Yeah, watch your step.
Betty! Jim, we're coming!
I can't hear you, not with this storm and all.
Oh, I thought if he heard me,
you forget it. Just watch. Are you all right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Here, I'll help you up.
Thank you.
There you are. All right, let's go.
All right.
We're almost there.
Yeah. I hope they're all right.
Go in quietly, huh? Just open the door and walk in.
Right.
The storm ought to cover any sounds we make.
Right.
And you just let me handle this.
All right.
Here we go. It's locked.
We'll have to break it down together then.
Here, all right.
Well, that was Betty.
Hey, we gotta get that door down.
Right.
That's it. That's it.
Betty, what's wrong?
You.
Well, of course. I brought the sheriff with me.
Where's the man that was here?
Oh, he's gone.
I thought it was him returning when you crashed against the door. That's why I screamed. I was afraid.
Well, I want to be sure that... Yep, it's Tom Monroe, all right.
You know this man?
Yeah, he's the grandson of old man Monroe, who murdered Jeff Stone by letting him freeze to death outside. Jeff Stone's revenge is over now.
But if he killed other people that came here, then why didn't he hurt us?
Revenge is a strange thing, ma'am. In Jeff Stone's case, I think it was strong enough to bring him back from the grave to try to even the score. And so he killed old man Monroe over again every time someone died here. And when he killed young Tom here, then his feeling for revenge left him.
Why?
Tom was the last of the Monroes, Mr. Blake. Jeff Stone's revenge is complete now. Yes, sir. It's complete now. And he can rest quiet in his grave.
So runs tonight's tale of the unusual, the terrifying, the unknown. Join us again when next we journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy to hear another strange tale of the supernatural. All characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
We're all out of time for this week, but we'll be back next week with more great old-time radio right where you found it, here at the RTC Weekly Download. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.